Clear your throat and prepare your best scream. I'm Joshua Halstead, and this is Schlock Culture from Faceless Empire.
It is Schlock Culture with your host, Schlock Jack. It's Schlock Culture with your host, Schlock Jack. It's Schlock Culture with your host, Schlock Jack. Josh.
Whether horror is your jam or not, you've undoubtedly heard the term Scream Queen. Now, in the horror community, Scream Queen is a phrase said with much love and admiration. These are the ladies that lead the films we adore. Seriously, go to a horror convention and see how people interact. The leading men, and the killers themselves, are treated like old friends by fans. But the Scream Queens? They are treated like royalty. Outside of the community, however, Scream Queen is often used as a derogatory term, because to those who don't jive with horror, these ladies are often seen as the poster children for a genre that is considered either problematic toward women or outright sexist. What I don't want to do is pretend that there is no merit to the belief that genre filmmaking is often sexist. As a fan, I do need to address the fact that, like all forms of art, horror can be created with misogynistic intent. And, though this breaks my heart to say, horror is almost certainly worse than most genres in this area. That being said, I want to dispel here today the idea that Scream Queens are nothing but dumb, big-breasted girls who exist only to provide eye candy or to be the subject of torture. In order to lay the groundwork for my argument, let's go ahead and take a gander through the history, or in this case, herstory, of horror. Scream Queens have always existed in some form within the world of horror, but this podcast is about horror cinema, so let's start there. With 1920s, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. Jane, in Dr. Caligari, much like Ellen in Nosferatu and Anne in 1933's King Kong, is nothing more than a damsel in distress. The sole function of all three of these characters is to scream in terror until the strong man saves them. In fact, this is where the derogatory use of the term Scream Queen really finds its roots. For most of the formative years of horror cinema, there were only two main characters for women, either the fair but weak maiden who needed a man to save her, or a strong independent woman who just so happened to be the villain. There are, of course, counterexamples to this, particularly outside the United States, for instance, some of the roles of Barbara Steele in early Italian horror, but for the most part, the leading ladies screamed helplessly until a man could save them, and if a lady wasn't screaming, she was probably the villain. But here's where things start to change. If we view the 1920s through 60s as the formative years of horror cinema, having to work through all the growing pains of audiences that weren't prepared for the shocking imagery, a review board that cracked down heavily on terror and violence, and filmmakers in general still developing the medium, then the 1970s were where horror began to take its true form. Gone were the days of the Hays Code. Now the R rating existed, and with it violence, more mature themes, and the ability to make complex films aimed for adults that pulled no punches. As the landscape of horror cinema changed, so too did the archetype of the Scream Queen. In the 1970s, we saw the rise of Giallo film, or in layman's terms, the Italian slasher genre, spearheaded by horror icon Dario Argento. These films were influenced heavily by the feel of 50s and 60s thrillers, particularly those of Alfred Hitchcock, but were free of the censorship within America. This gives us one of the best early examples of strong female scream queens, that of Jessica Harper, her character Susie Bannon, in Argento's masterpiece Suspiria. Argento was phenomenal in general when it came to portraying women, but this is a particularly strong case. Susie Bannon stands out as one of the greatest leading lady characters of all time, because she's neither a weak emotional mess nor a perfect unstoppable woman. Rather, she's a real human, who is at times weak and at times strong, at times scared and at times confident as hell. She outsmarts the villains, and she saves herself. All of this without having sacrificed the femininity of the character. Just as giallos were influenced by older American films, American horror films began to draw inspiration from giallo. See, Giallo films often had a psychosexual element. These women were strong and independent, sure, but they were also women dealing with their burgeoning sexuality. Awakening, so to speak. Struggling with confused sexual feelings, or fighting to escape the grasp of sexual abuse. Giallo films were deftly handled, though. So, they rarely felt exploitative or overly sexual in nature. And now, oh boy, let's talk about how that influenced 1970s American horror cinema. I want to start with the good before transitioning to, well, the less good. In the 1970s, many American horror filmmakers looked to Giallo filmmakers like Dario Argento and Mario Bava, not only for inspiration regarding the central female characters, but also the slow-burn psychological thriller elements. Thus, we got films like Wes Craven's The Last House on the Left and The Hills of Eyes, John Carpenter's Halloween, Bob Clark's Black Christmas, Tobe Hooper's The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and David Cronenberg's Shivers. These were smart, well-paced, slow-burn thrillers featuring women whose sexuality was on display without necessarily defining them. Craven's entries here, perhaps more than any others, really dive into that psychosexual area, while being careful not to cross the line or go too far. These films are the first examples of strong, powerful women as the leads in horror films. But then, there's the bad. And in the 1970s, when it was bad, it was very, very bad. These are the films like Herschel Gordon Lewis's The Gorgor Girls, Mira Zarchi's I Spit on Your Grave, or Vicente Aranda's The Blood-Spattered Bride. Movies that masqueraded as pro-feminist revenge films, but ultimately serve as little more than over-the-top, graphic nudity-laden depictions of sadistic male fetishism. These women weren't strong, and they weren't three-dimensional. They existed to serve a specific narrative. That of woman gets brutally attacked on screen in a way that's clearly intended to titillate, not to terrify, and then she hunts them down. She doesn't outsmart or overpower them, generally. She just uses the power of seduction. These films sent extremely problematic messages about women, but it was the 70s, so people didn't much care. In the 80s, we saw a lot of horror films, and specifically slashers, intentionally underdevelop all of their characters. This was done to match a formula that had been proven to work, and yeah, it worked. Generally in these films, if anyone was well-developed or given much of a character at all, it was these final girls. They would often figure it out before other people, they'd keep their wits about them while fighting off the villain, and often they'd outsmart them. That's not to say that they were great characters, but they did deliver a strong message about the capabilities of women. Well, most of the time. In the 90s and early 2000s, we started to see the rise of more complex female characters who were more fleshed out. See, for instance, Sidney Prescott in Wes Craven's Scream series. Because of the success of Scream, a lot of 90s and early 2000s slashers had strong female protagonists with more emotional complexities. Until they all realized you can vaguely portray the same idea without nearly as much work if you just have the female characters say one-liners and outsmart the slasher in the end. So they needn't worry themselves with pesky things like character development or narrative consistency. That brings us to modern day. Audiences are craving non-traditional protagonists, which is to say basically anybody but straight white men. Well, in a lot of other genres, there's been a lot of struggling to figure out how to do so marketably. Horror filmmakers just sort of dove in headfirst. They started to craft emotionally complex characters, with a female as the lead, whose journey through the story was ultimately symbolic of her greater internal struggles. We can see this in films like It Follows, Lights Out, Hereditary, Midsommar, The Babadook, Don't Breathe, and many more. This new generation of Scream Queens are actually all about female empowerment, and the stories around them are more often than not more about overcoming oppression and abuse than the literal monster in front of them. So okay, that's a whole lot to unpack, and there's a ton of complexity. Since this is a short podcast, you'll have to pardon me for the admittedly simplified breakdown here, but with a disclaimer out of the way, let's give it a try. Scream queens have ranged from horribly sexist to incredibly feminist and powerful, and everywhere in between. To ignore the bad would be to doom ourselves to repeat those mistakes. Yes, but to downplay the good would be just as great an injustice. There aren't many other genres with a track record of strong women breaking barriers, outsmarting their abusers, and rising to daunting situations. So even if horror misses the mark almost as much as it hits the mark, it stands out as a bright spot for women. And we horror hounds love our strong female protagonists. It's why we love Sidney Prescott for outsmarting and outstrengthening Ghostface 4 times. It's why we love Nancy Thompson for setting up traps and figuring out how to take down Freddy Krueger. And by God, it's why we love Laurie Strode for being the emotionally complex, competent, strong-willed woman that she was, without having to sacrifice her femininity. So yeah, Scream Queens are awesome, and in many cases, feminist, and in almost all cases, very important within the history of cinema. So happy Friday the 13th, and while you're watching your horror movies tonight, try to pause for a moment to think about all the hard work women have put into the genre, and how women have defined the genre, especially your favorite Scream Queens. Until next time, I'm Joshua Halstead. Don't forget to go schlock yourself.